The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry with Joe McGill.
Good morning, how are you this morning? I'm Joe McGill and you're listening to the Saturday Supplement, and I hope I find you well wherever you are listening to us around the world on RadioKerry.ie, on the Radio Kerry app, or on the traditional wireless 96 to 98 FM. And a very big welcome to all those families of the people taking part in the Ring of Kerry cycle, which is on this morning. And I hope everyone is staying safe, and well done to all the volunteers. And of course, it's all for great causes and great charities. And well done to Cathal Walsh and all the team. And it's right into the thick of it now. So if you are going on a journey, allow extra time, or maybe wait a little later to go on the journey as well. And just be careful, and well done to all of them involved. Very shortly, we're going to have our In Focus photography slot with renowned photographer Dominic Walsh. We're also going to be celebrating All-Ireland drama success with Mimry Lane Theatre from Lixna. We're going to be talking to them. And in the next hour as well, there's a call out for nominations for the Hugh O'Flaherty, Monsignor Hugh O'Flaherty Humanitarian Award. So we'll be talking about that as well in the next hour. But I mentioned it is the first Saturday of the month, so that means it's time for our monthly In Focus slot with Dominic Walsh. Dominic, you're very welcome. How are you this morning?
Good morning to you, Joe. I didn't think you'd be on this morning. I thought you might be on your bike, you know, that the morning that is in it. And congratulations to all these riders taking off on their trip today around the Ring of Kerry like that. And as you said to drivers, be careful, take your time, give them patience. It's an amazing trip, and fair play to them for doing it.
Yeah, and just a special word of mention to the Ballinskellig's Inshore Rescue. I was one of the ambassadors for them, so I want to wish them every success as well to a day. Dominic, you've been busy. It's rose season for you, of course.
Coming into rose season now, we're starting to get a bit of excitement now at our in the Rose Tree office now, because we're getting all our stuff ready now. We're getting all our pitches ready for brochures and everything like that. And I think nearly all the roses are in place at this stage. We're just discussing the itinerary for the trip. I'll start my work with them around the 5th of August. I start going on the tour. Around 10th or 11th, I go away that. I'll have Mark Nolan, my picture editor, and Dan Lennon, my other photographer, will be coming with me, and we'll head off up there on the tour then as well like that. Looking forward. A bit nervous, do you think, but you're like this far ahead. It gets a bit nerve-wracking because you're trying to plan. You're trying to put everything into place. You're trying to look at your notes from last year to see can you change anything to make it different or run smoother this year from my point of view. But yeah, once we get into it, Joe, we'll be fine.
And the last time we were talking to you, you were going to be going out that afternoon or that day with the escorts. How did you get on taking their photos?
Got on great. What a day. We went back to Jamie Knox back in the Maharees there, and they were surfing, they were swimming, they were on obstacles like that, you know, and they had a great time. They were running around. They went back to Dingle on that. But the wind, my God, the sun was out. We had blue skies, but it was blowing about a force 5 to 6 is what it was.
Really?
You know, and it was a pure westerly wind, like, you know, like, and it was a strong wind like that, you know, but it was lovely. Like the guys in all the country, it's a great bonding session for them. They make friends on the day. They meet on the Fridays, their first time meeting. And when they go away on the Sunday after we leave the fire station below, we bring them down to the fire station. That's absolutely brilliant when we go down to the fire station, Joe. What they do is they bring them into the fire station. They're all buddies. They're all great. We put them into teams like that, you know. And the fire officers practice their fire hose and techniques. And they're doing the obstacle course races. Yeah. It's absolutely brilliant. Great fun for them, you know.
You mentioned the wind there. What do you do? How do you position yourself? What pose do you take up to brace yourself for the wind, or so you're steady as possible? For instance, if you don't have something to rest your elbows on, if you're out in the middle of somewhere and the wind is blowing, how do you steady yourself?
You will probably see me taking a funny old stance. I'll probably put 1 foot forward into the wind, mm-hmm. or if the wind is coming from behind me, either 1 foot forward and back, and I might drop down low, or I might even kneel down or even sit down altogether so I can control the camera. It depends on which lens I'm using, Joe. If it's the big lens, Joe, it can be quite difficult because like wind just doesn't come in a wind. It tends to come in gusts as well. And every now and then a gust could knock you over like that, you know. But all it is just practice. I don't mind the wind. It's the rain. And we have different types of rain, as you hear me going on about, Joe. We have what's called wet rain. That's that light, misty rain.
Every rain is wet.
That just goes all over the place. You can't stay dry from it. And then we have rain, as in lashing rain, that drops down. You put up an umbrella and you're nice and comfortable underneath that, you know. See, yeah. Joe, like you're probably, you know, a kind of a country boy that we have to mind. Like, you probably don't take the weather so much. When the rain comes, you probably tend to go indoors, so you might know all the different types of rain.
Sometimes, Dominic, think you're having us on here of a Saturday morning with your different types of rain and wet rain. You photographers are a funny bunch. But I was thinking, you know, it's football season and I know the weather has been good, but there often you see photographers, you know, in a championship game in the depths of the winter there and the wind is blowing and they've those long lenses. So it must be very hard to stop them blowing around the wind and to get your photo right then.
It is, but when you look at those photographers, mainly probably 90% of the time, unless the action is at the other end of the pitch, they will have their back to the wind.
Okay.
And as the winds come in, or they might tuck themselves into the wall or a corner or something like that to protect themselves from the wind and from that rain as well, whether it's raining or wet rain, as I shall say, that misty rain that just gets stuck in every nook and cranny there like that. So you'll see them down nice and low. And again, what you do is you tend to increase your speed. Your shutter speed, increase it up a bit. So when the wind starts rattling the lenses, like, you know, right, at least you can get a sharp image. Because the bigger lenses that you use, any little bit of movement is magnified exponentially because of the distal focal length. Whereas wide angle lenses, you could be just walking with them and get perfect pictures that way. So it's just a technique that we tend to use.
Yeah. Now, your first photo, Dominic always brings in photos from his month or from recent times. And the first photo you wanted to bring in or show us, it's kind of more, I suppose, more like an archive photo, is Marion Fawcett of the famous Fawcett Circus, who passed away recently. And the Fawcetts have had a huge connection with this county. I remember being involved with them myself in 2011 for the first Charlie Chaplin Comedy Festival that was on in Waterville. I was involved in that, and we dealt a lot with the Fawcett family, and Marion was there, and Herta, the mother, and we got on very well with Sarah and Edward, who are the next generation. Edward is Otto the Clown, and Sarah is one of those wonderful acrobats, and she's absolutely unreal at it. And Marion, of course, was a part of a popular pop trio, was she? That's before my time now, Dominic.
Yes, yeah, she played in a band. She was a singer in a band. That the name of the actual band now escapes the moment.
Was it Maxie Dick and Twink? No, was she one of them? No.
I think she was, yes, yeah. And that's, yeah. Like, and she was an amazing lady. She was an amazing singer. And like, and Marion and I, like, we used to have chats and we used to be talking. I'd say, look, I'm going down to 3 o'clock. I'm going to bring the roses down. She'd say, fine. I might arrive down at 3:30 with the roses. And Marion's inside looking out at me. And I could see her looking at me. And she just winks at me and said, you're okay, Dominic, come on in, like that. She just had she had a great heart about her. She had a great way about her. And like when kids used to come into the circus like that, like she greeted them, she'd kneel down with them, she'd talk with them like that. She had a presence when she came in. And what a sad loss to the circus and that community there, like a performers, you know. And that, yeah. Because as you say, Fawcetts are synonymous with the fest and with the country. They're around forever.
Yeah.
You know, I can remember when we were young during the festival, and I was very young, they used to be inside in the town park. And we used to be watching, waiting for him to go. And when they were gone, then about 7 or 8 of us from my local estate used to go down, and we used to walk around in circles around the circus tent when they took it away to see could we find any coins or anything in the grass. You know?
Yeah. So, because Marion has had a great voice as well, like a great broadcasting voice. And she was the ringleader, I suppose that's what you call it.
Ringmaster.
Like ringmaster, the MC. So like if anyone has seen the film The Greatest Showman, she is that person. She was the person in the middle.
Yes.
And she would bring it all to life, because I couldn't get over the standard of what they do. Is like it's Cirque du Soleil levels. It's brilliant. And you've Otto the Clown, and of course that is like a tradition. The clown is like a very prestigious part to have in a circus. But it was very funny. One night we were coming down after the festival was finishing, and there was Otto the clown, and he's still his Otto suit, pulling down the tent, all hands on deck. And that's the way that family are. They're very much hands-on.
There's no airs and graces there. No. I'd say you're inside there. There's a rope thrown into your hand. Yeah. There's a hammer or there's a stick or whatever's put into your hand to get the place going. Everybody helps and everybody works. Even Marion, you see Marion out there, like, and she'd be organising things. She'd be reversing trucks and driving around there like that. It was just unbelievable how they actually get it. And it's amazing. They tend to come in, they're there, and all of a sudden, tent is up, everything's there, lights are flashing, music's playing, and it's unbelievable like that. It's a great experience. Do you know something? It's experience, Joe, that we've kind of lost now, isn't it? That live entertainment.
Yeah.
Where you can go in, make an effort to drive, make an effort to walk into a tent, you know, on that, and escape,
because that's what Marion was good at doing as well. She'd create this world of wonder. Her voice was like magical, so for the kids, and she'd really big up everything, you know. So it was like the kids' imagination could run wild, and it was escapism as well.
Like you probably understand this now, being a singer yourself on that, you know, how the voice, and she kind of sing out the words, and then she kind of go way up very high and then come back down and low, and she'd be interacting with Otto then, and they'd be having a banter, and she'd be saying, get out of the place, go away. And he'd go away and he'd come back in behind her, and he'd be standing behind her, mimicking her, things like that. So she really got involved in it and really got the kids, you know, and that's a hard job.
Yeah.
You know, to keep everybody entertained like that.
And when you say interacting with Otto, like, that's her actual nephew, so that's Edward. So, like, it's a huge loss for the family, because they went everywhere together and they get on great as well. So it's very sad. Our thoughts and prayers are with all the Fossetts, and we look forward to welcoming them for many years to come. Now, your next photo, this is... A Steinway, is it? Is that what they call a piano? Which is a fairly famous make of piano. And it was restored. And this is to do with Siom Satir. Explain this one.
Siom Satir, they had a piano there for years. And they sent it off last year to get it refurbished and rebuilt and repainted and re-everything, I think, actually. And what they had is, just recently, they had it... A kind of a concert or a quartet or playing down there, do you know? And they did a lady. Now, I can't pronounce. Is it Shutin Imbarati?
It sounds good enough to me.
Shutin Imbarati was this lady that was playing the piano, and there was a bass player there as well, and that, and there was a saxophone player as well, like that, and she played music. Now, my job is to go in and photograph this amazing piano, which I did on that. And I went in during the live show, which I find very hard to do because I'm very restricted in what I can do, Joe. I can't be walking around the place, get the cameras, shut the cameras down. All the noise has gone off the cameras. You can't hear any noise. Big lens on the camera, monopod shooting across and trying to get myself in position and not to be walking around too much. So I went in earlier. And there was nobody there. And I worked out my positions, where I wanted to go and where I wanted to stand. But I had this idea in my head. When this young lady was practicing and I was in the wings, and I'd look and I could see her shadow on the top of the lid when they lifted it up. And so instead of going for the whole piano, now the listeners can go on our Facebook page there, and they can have a look at these images that I've shot and all the other images that we'll be putting up there today as well. But I shot it and I got the angles, the edges of the piano, and I changed it to black and white. And it's an unusual picture. If anybody is interested, it was shot at 200 of a second. The lens I used was a 70 to 200 mil, which is a mid-range lens. The f-stop was f.4. The ISO was very high. The ISO regulates the amount of light that can come into the camera. That was 2,500. I had it on autofocus and I lock it. So what I mean by that is I get the focus of the young lady, her eyes. I always go for the eyes. I hold it, lock that focus. And no matter where I put the lens, left, right, up or down, it will always stay sharp into her eyes. So I think it's a nice picture. And it's the fact that she's looking down, playing away, and you can see the reflection just over her head.
I think it's an amazing photo, Dominic. I think you're underselling it. It's absolutely stunning. And I think shooting would love to have this photo because the way she's reflected in the lid of the piano and even her own expressions on her face, you can really see she's feeling the music. And it's just a wonderful use of the black, the way it surrounds it and the way it's in. It's part of the piano. It's part of the background. And her face is the center point of it all. I think it's a stunning. It's a real artistic shot. So well done, Dominic.
Thank you very much. And if I can just say one thing about it, Joe, there's special paint on this piano. It's not a high gloss. It's a semi-matte, so it doesn't reflect all the lights and everything like that. It keeps, so it really, it's like, so usually you see pianos and you can see the lights at a distance, you can see a reflection on
yeah.
it. This piano, it's a matte glossy finish, okay. Lovely finish.
Yeah, brilliant. And I'd say it was a real pleasure for people to hear what came out of it after it being restored as well. Dominic, stay with us. You have another photo to show us from your month, but we'll go to break and we'll have more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shop and Seafood Bar, the Mall Tralee. Treat yourself to the freshest takeaway fish and chips today, right in the heart of Tralee.
Oh, you're listening to the Saturday Supplement, and we have Dominic Walsh with us for our monthly In Focus Photography slot, because it is the first Saturday of the month. I'm looking here at a photo with lots of familiar faces. Many of the councillors from around this county are in the council chamber, and Dominic, this is the swearing-in of the new mayor of Kerry.
What it is actually, it's inside in the chambers over in Kerry County Council buildings, where a lot of people probably just have never been into or have never seen on that. And this is after that our Mayor of Kerry, Mikey Sheehy, councillor, has been selected there as mayor.
As elected, yeah.
And he's just getting ready to give his speech. And my job is to go and archive the day for Kerry County Council so that in 10 years, 100 years, whatever it is like that, they actually have an archive of all these AGMs and the different mayors in the different municipal districts that are actually selected on the day. So all in and trying to make a picture out of something like that. Now, I know we have some empty seats there, but there are councillors that can actually do online. They can be online now as well and get into the chamber that way. They don't actually have to be on site.
Mm.
To get these votes now at this stage. So what I opted to do was put my camera up on my 1424mm lens and set it at 14, the widest lens that spaced it to get in as much as I could. And what it is, I brought in a monopod. Now, a monopod is like a pole, basically, that you extend. And I put my camera on top of the monopod, tilted out the back of my camera where I could view the back of the camera, and I had a lead coming from the camera down along the monopod to my hand, and I lifted that up quite high because I'm shooting from a height. So I'm 6 foot one tall. The monopod is another 6 foot above that. So that's 12 feet above the chamber, and I'm shooting down, and it just gives a panoramic view of the chamber, and you can see everybody inside. They listen, the mayor is just talking there after being elected. You can see his family in the background there like that, you know. You can see his wife and his three daughters there, and you can see his mom and his dad are there as well, and that, you know. And
yeah, his famous dad.
Famous dad. Yeah. Yes, indeed, a famous dad like that, you know, uh-huh. On that. So, like, it's a very proud day for family and friends to witness this, and it's a unique occasion. And that he's there now, the end of this year, next year now as well, and that. And it's lovely. Again, go onto the Radio Kerry website there, have a look at these images and see them, because it's actually quite interesting to see the layout of the chamber, because the chamber has changed. It was facing north-south, and it's now facing east to west. In other words, that the mayor is sitting on the east side of the chamber.
Okay.
On that. So they changed all around.
Very good. Well, we wish him all the best, Mikey. And of course, that is a huge honour as well to be bestowed upon him. Dominic, I believe congratulations are in order because you've been shortlisted for an international special drone photography award. Congratulations. Well done, Dom.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Joe. And I'd say, look, I've been nominated. I'm in the final of the Drone International Awards on that. It was a shot I took last year of, I don't even have the picture, Joe, and I'm not ready or anything like that, but it's a shot I took outside in Brinneville of the Dunleary to Dingle boat race, and the boat was just coming into the bay, and I brought the drone in behind it, down nice and low, and photographed it as it was going through the water. It was the winning boat came in. So thank you.
I remember that shot, I think. I remember that, yeah. That was stunning, now that I think of it. Drone photography, like, well, what makes it different then? Is it, like, how would it be judged? Would it be judged differently, or is it, like, still all the same kind of principles involved, or what?
Yes, it is all the same principles, yes. Like they're all the same principles, like, drone, your settings, your speeds, the angling, like that. But the one thing about the drone has that I can't do myself, it can get me into those very odd, awkward angles. It can get me out onto water, like, you know, like when I'm not on a boat, on that, like I was on a boat at a distance photographing this on that. So like, it's like drone, it just gives a different perspective of what we can shoot on that. And again, like, you know, you probably know yourself, drone, again, stay within the law, keep it all, bear in mind, don't be going too close to people and things that are actually with it. But on that, but it's just the drones now can go quite fast. I could keep up with the yacht as it was going along, and as it was tilting and moving on that, I was able to get the shots. And I was able to, because if I was on a boat, I'd be rocking along things like that. But I was able to work on my shutter speed, my aperture, everything from my controls while they were coming in. So yeah, it was great.
Excellent.
Something different, and it just works.
Yeah, well, congratulations on being nominated, and hopefully you can even go a step further. But to be nominated is a huge honour, so well done, Dominic.
Thank you for thinking of me, Joe. I appreciate that.
Now we're going to go to a break, and after that we're going to be looking at your photos, and the theme was capturing the moment, or a moment. So we'll take a break with more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Quinlan's The Mad Monk in Killarney, serving the finest seafood in a cosy modern atmosphere. Book your special experience today at seafoodbar.ie.
Now it is the first Saturday of the month, and that means it is our photography slot with renowned photographer Dominic Walsh in Focus with Dominic Walsh, to give it its correct title. Now, as always, we give you a theme each month, and you send in your photos, and the theme we chose last month was capturing the moment. And this one, Moss Joe Brown, if ever a theme was made for you, this is one. Capturing that special moment in life, as John Martin O'Sullivan from Ballylongford is singing a midweek heartfelt song for the customers at Brosnan's Bar, Listowel, while using facial and physical expressions to deliver The Cowboy Rides Away, recorded by George Strait. Yours, Moss Joe Brown. I was only listening to that song this week, would you believe? George Strait, a great old country singer. And there is our man, John Martin O'Sullivan, with the hands outstretched and the mouth is open, belting out The Cowboy Rides Away. It's a great capture, Dominic, isn't it?
It is. It's a great capture. But look, what do you expect from Moss? Like he just gets out there, and like, he's every place, really. And he's coming up with great shots. Lighting, absolutely fantastic. I really like the lighting. And I like the fact he's turned it almost into a panoramic. So it's a wide shot. In other words, where our gentleman, John Martin, like, is seated, and he's got his hands stretched out, and it's like as if he's brought the photograph along with the hands. It's a great picture, and I absolutely love it. Capturing the moment, as you said, it was actually made from Moss Joe Brown. Capturing the moment. Lovely picture.
Now, Dinny Galvin sends us a wonderful selection of photos. Lambs taking shelter at Aglish, Lispol, County Kerry. And just for you at home, now, we have the photos up on the website. If you look for In Focus, you'll find them there. But this, for those of you that can't see it, it's a tree, a trunk, but the tree is kind of hollowed out in the middle. It's a lovely little kind of a house that's made in the middle of the tree. And these two lambs, wouldn't you know it, they found that they're sheltering inside there. It's a beautiful capture. The next one is a mum protecting her young, distracted by pheasants' movement. And that is a freezing cow there with a fine udder of milk and a newborn calf underneath her. And then we have West Kerry Mahal Tree Planting Group on Dinny's farm at Aglish, Lispol. And Dinny, haven't you some view in your farm there in Lispol? You're looking across my direction down to South Kerry there as well. And this tree planting group, I don't think I've heard about it. It sounds very interesting. I must find out more. But a great selection of photos, Dominic, and really capturing moments.
It is, actually, it is. And to be honest, I know Dinny Galvin quite well. What a gentleman, what an environmentalist he is. His farm has been opened. I've been out there so many times, and my God, the information you get from him about, you know, climate and, like, you know, solar panels and EVs and planting trees. He's a pond out there now on his farm, you know, to help the frogs and the wildlife outside. And I see the tree planters. I see Declan Malone there, a journalist from back West Kerry. I see Magella O'Sullivan, a journalist there as well. On that, I see a few more people there that I recognise, but I don't know their names. And he has got a great view. But see, Joe, like, you don't realise it, like, you know, like the people in North Kerry, like West Kerry, we have that lovely view down south, you know?
Yeah.
And that, like, you don't look up to us enough, you know? Like, we look down to you, all right, but you should look up to us a bit more, you know, on that. But it's great. And I love it. It's a great picture. And look, the calf and the cow, like, you know, great picture on that. But I really, really like it. I had to look at the two sheep, or sorry, the two lambs inside in the tree, because I was wondering first. I actually thought they were part of the tree and there was just a hole in the tree. But as you say, when I looked at it and we see it like that, because I don't know who takes them when I look at them, and I just look at the picture as its entire to see what it is. It's a lovely picture. It's great.
Mm. Now, we spoke about a famous song earlier. Another famous song by Otis Redding was Sitting on the Dock of a Bay. And that's what Winifred Corn has titled this in Cullinagh in Dingle. And Winnie has taken a beautiful shot of all the fishing trawlers in the background in the marina there in Dingle. And then you have this wonderful bird. Is it a tern or a Norian raga, we used to call them? But beautiful, you know, those tall birds with the big long yellow beaks, white and black, and looks like it's standing on one leg. And that is really capturing the moment.
It is. You can tell it's capturing the moment. Me and birds, we don't get on well. Anytime I go to photo, they fly away like that, you know. I don't have the patience to wait and see what happens like that. It's lovely. And the fact that the bird is actually looking to the right, and you think the bird is looking back into the lens on that. The composition is nice around you. You see the boats, things like that, you know. And, like, look, the bird is an opportunist is what it's there on the day. It's there trying to get a fish or something like that that might be on the pier or something from the fishermen, bring them in. So that's why I'd say it's there like that. It's a lovely picture. I really like it, and I like the shape of it.
That was the whistling. I was trying to think of City on the Dock of the Bay. That's it in the background. That's the music that's played to it. Do you know that song, Dominic?
I thought you were going off the rails altogether, boy, when you started to whistle. I said, what is he doing? But look, Joe, you obviously know best. Again, you're getting back to this South Kerry issue, but you know best.
It was in my head there, and I was like, what is that tune? I'm trying to, there it is. No, I have it. Hi, Joe and Dominic. These are my two attempts at capturing the moment. Peter, as he lit his pipe before he left for home, and a sunrise over West Cove last week, where the sheep came running up to me as I was about to take the photo. So I waited for them. Regards, Stephen O'Shea. And again, we're talking about moments. That is a photo of Peter and his pipe in the car, and he lights the pipe. It is dark, so it's actually the glow of the light that lights up his face, and there he is sucking on the pipe, and it's just a great photo. Again, it's capturing a moment. Likewise with the sheep, that's very serendipitous as well, just there at the right time, right place, right time.
But look, it just goes to show, like, you need to be ready to take pictures, because that moment, like, that moment is there. And if you turn away and look back again, it's gone. So it's lovely to get it. And it's nice to think about, you can actually take pictures when it's quite dark, and you can use light, whether it's a match or even the dashboard coming on, you can use that light to feed back into the face, and it can give you great effects. It's absolutely lovely. And the sheep, absolutely lovely. Look, that sun coming in from behind. I call that backlit now when the sun's coming in. It's pure orange coming in top of them. And it's amazing. All the sheep are looking the one way.
Yeah.
On that. So it's absolutely lovely. And the composition again is great.
Yeah, they know to look at the camera. Of course, animals like that are very inquisitive, aren't they? Like, you'd see cattle would run up to you as well, you know, if you were there. So it makes for a great shot. And they're all nicely, freshly shorn as well, which they needed to be for the hot weather we had.
Oh my God, that weather was hot. I couldn't cope with that weather.
That was too much, no. That was too much.
It was.
Yeah.
It was too much, yeah.
But I tell you, Dominic, we think it was too much, but I had people coming into the brewery from Germany and different places, and they actually came here just on the spur of the moment because they wanted to escape the heat in Germany. It was like 40 degrees there or something, mental. In France, it was 40-something degrees.
I was in Ghana one time working, carrying 23 kilos on my back of camera gear, and it was over 40 degrees Celsius inside in a forest. Oh my God, it was to die inside there like that.
Yeah.
And it was just pure baking heat. It's unbelievable, you know. And a lot of people come over here from these warm countries over here because we've got nice temperate climates and they're lovely. And we'd be giving out about the rain and they're coming over for us.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we were saying this before, but I think it's a misconception that we think people are coming over here for the weather. They're not. Because, again, we had visitors that were from America and they were running out of clothes to wear because they brought all their kind of jumpers and things and rain gear. They were expecting the rain and they didn't like the heat because they said they have enough of that at home. So it just shows you what we think that people are visiting here for is not necessarily what they are visiting here for. But another thing I love is, you know, if you say, geez, it's very hot. Oh, we won't complain. Don't complain. You can't complain.
I heard that all the time like that. And we have a magnificent county. I know when the sun shines, it is absolutely magnificent. And like in any place in the world, like Kerry is the place to be like that. Was it John B. Keane said a day out of Kerry is a day lost?
It's a day wasted.
Something like that,
a day wasted.
A day wasted, that's it. Like, we've absolutely unbelievable scenery down here.
Yep. And no better man to turn a phrase than John B. Hi, Joe and Dominic. My photo's attached for July. Jellyfish in Phoenix Harbour. This is fully open, amazing to watch, and beautiful colour. The second one, dinner table set for outdoor wedding celebration in Spain last week in a beautiful old monastery hotel. And the third one, arriving back in Shannon Airport in the early morning. Regards, Siobhan O'Connor. Isn't it lovely to be going away for a wedding to Spain? And you know what's unique about that photo, Dominic? And again, a wedding is a moment, isn't it? Capturing the moments of a wedding. There's loads of different moments that take place. The length of this table, Dominic. Now, it must be a load of tables shoved together. But geez, I'm counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. 20-something chairs all the way along in one length on either side.
It's like a Sunday dinner in your house there, Joe, you know, with all the family come in. Yeah. It is absolutely. I think it's a great picture. And I really like the picture. The camera's on top of the table. There's a spoon in front of it. And each side, left and right of the camera, there's a row of glasses turned upside down. They turn them face down, going along. And it's like a road. It's like a runway coming down off in. And you've got the parasols up over there like that. You've got a lovely blue sky. You know it's a very important time by looking at the photos. You know it's a very social event with all the chairs. It's absolutely lovely.
Yeah, it's a stunning photo. And then the jellyfish as well. That's a hard capture, I'd imagine. It just shows the beauty of nature, doesn't it?
They're on. Be careful of the jellyfish. Some of them sting. So, like, be careful. Like, I hear a lot of people getting stung there recently like that. You know, watch yourself going into the water with them like that. Do you know?
Yeah.
And that's some you can touch, some you can't. But it's great. They're amazing colour. They're absolutely amazing colour like that, you know. Mm. And that. And if you get it either, let's say, late evening when the sun is coming down top of it, there's actually that extra light behind them as well. It's absolutely look. Great picture. Composition is nice. And it just shows they just pass you by and you take your picture. The moment is in it.
Yeah, and then this is the statue in Shannon Airport. That's Paul O'Connell, isn't it? Going up for the ball, the rugby ball. I think it is, anyway. But again, that's probably capturing a moment on the rugby pitch and then it was frozen in time as a statue. So, again, very clever by Siobhan capturing a moment that has been captured before.
It is, yes, yeah. I have to say it's a very clever. And Shannon Airport, lovely airport to go. And to go in and see this, it's absolutely lovely. When you see the action on that, and you could take that statue from many angles and come out with many different pictures and different ways of shooting. It's absolutely lovely.
And finally, good morning, Joe and Dominic. I attach my three pictures. Number one, our granddaughter, Saoirse, holding the world in her hands. And just for people at home, it's a globe, but it's a football that's a globe. Very clever. It's actually a football that's, you know, the globe. So, very clever. Number two, roses looking good at sundown. And the third one, the evening sun over Dingle Bay. Best wishes to you and your families, Agnes O'Sullivan. The sun was setting over the westward as the fleet, were leaving Dingle Bay.
I might just correct the horizon in that. I like straight horizons.
You know, oh, yes.
Just think of that when you're taking a picture. Very important to get that horizon right. Like that, you know, lovely picture on that. The flowers and the sunset, quite nice shooting into. That's backlit as well on that. Now, the only thing, it was a bit backlit, so, and the flowers and the leaves would be quite dark. I would have left them quite dark as opposed to bring them up a little bit brighter to get it in. So, lovely picture, but, you know, just kind of work what you have and what you're getting out of it. And that's a good picture, if you know what I mean. And, of course, the child with the glow, with the football, things like that. It's absolutely lovely. Footballs to me mean nothing because I didn't play football when I was young like that. I wouldn't being out there. I was more into the swimming side of things like that, you know, but it's lovely to see it. And to see the child's eyes looking up, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed looking up. Lovely pictures.
Yeah. Right, so our humour photo of the month, Dominic, what have you gone for?
The humour photograph of the month goes to that man out in West Kerry, Dinny Galvin, and I'm delighted Dinny got it on that, you know. It's lovely to see it. The two lambs inside in the tree. There's a big hole. They're inside in it. They're protected from the air. Whether the sun is out, whether it's raining, they're well protected inside there, and I'd say they're nice and cool. This was a lovely picture.
Clever little lambs. And your photo of the month?
Our photo of the month. Thanks to all the listeners that send in the photographs. We love getting pictures in. We love chatting about them the day before and going through them all and working out what we have on that. The one that I picked out actually with the moment was the bird on the railing back in West Kerry. That was taken by Winnie Curran, and it's a great picture. It's lovely. It has it all. It's in the moment and it's there. Special mention to Master Joe Brown, of course, but I think this lady gets it.
Yeah, and it's a heron. I think I called it a tern earlier. Heron, H-E-R-O-N. Yeah. And, of course, we call him Noreen Rogers. I don't know where that nickname came from. But that is it. A wonderful capture there. Well done, Winnie Curran. You're our photo of the month. And the theme for next month, Dominic?
The theme for next month. Now, I have to admit, listeners, I didn't pick the theme for the month on that. Joe and I were bantering about it like that, and I was coming up with my fantastic ideas for the month, and they were really good on that. But see, it's Joe's show, and I had to bow to him, and he had to come back to me, you know. So he came up with a very good one. My home.
My
home. Do you want to explain, Joe?
I do, yeah. No, it just came to me, and I threw it at Dominic, and I didn't want to be stepping on his toes now, but my home. So this, the way I was thinking about this, say if you were on holiday, and I don't know, you were on a beach in Lanzarote, and someone said, where's home for you? And you would go, this is my home, and you'd show them a photo. Now, that could be a photo of your family. It could be a photo of your favourite place you go to. What represents home to you? It could be a beautiful landscape as well. This is home to me. Now, some people might think home, oh, that's the kingdom, it's Kerry. But a lot of people, you know, have other places that's home to them, but they might be living here. So whatever home is to you, my home. Email them to jmcgill@radiokerry.ie before midday Wednesday, before the first Saturday of the month. My home. It's all right, Dominic, isn't it?
It's perfect. And it can be your home place where you like to relax. You might like to go to a restaurant and sit down and say, now I relax, I feel at home here. It can be something as simple or as broad as that. The reason that we come up with these titles and these names, it's not that we're going to say it has to be your house. It's to get your mind working. And that's how we do it. And it gets you out and gets you thinking. Actually, Joe.
Excellent.
I have to say, it's a good one.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how good it is now with the photos we get next month. Email them to jmcgill@radiokerry.ie before midday Wednesday, before the first Saturday of the month. We're going to take a break, and after that, we're going to be going into Dominic Walsh's archive.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across the county. Serving the freshest seafood to Kerry families since 1963.
Now we're here with Dominic Walsh, and we're going into his archive. And Dominic, you have chosen kind of a different kind of a one this time. Explain to our listeners, what is this photo of?
This photograph that I have here was taken on the 21st of the 8th, 2007. It was a busy, warm, sunny day in Tralee, up in Ballybeggan Racecourse while the races were on. And what happened during the races came along, there was a bomb warning. So everybody had to vacate the place on that, and they all had to get them out as fast as they could. And of course, they forgot about the photographer. They got everybody else out and never thought about me. I was over in the corner just taking pictures of what was happening, as you do, instead of running for my life and waiting outside as I was told to do. I kind of just stood. I went to where the judges go up. They go up in a high spot. They can walk, watch the course going around and the horses racing around. So I was there. So the pictures you have the guards arrived, as they do, and they were helping with the evacuation. You have the race being stopped. You have the pictures of the horses and the jockeys and people going out to help the jockeys to get everybody away to safety on that. And then you have hundreds of people walking up along the course and the stands, and they're walking out. And then you have a picture at stage then where I took it. At one side is the course, all empty, nobody there, just one security standing there. And on the left-hand side then, where the car park was up at the race course, full of people, and they're all inside there like that, and they're kind of the pandemonium, they're settling down a bit like that. And of course then, after it was all okayed and everything was fine and they allowed everybody back in, you've the crowd rushing back into the gate and they're going into their stands. Again, they want to get their little spot, their little tables or whatever they were doing, or back to the restaurant or the bar or whatever like that. It was just an unusual one, and it was something that I wasn't used to, and I think people are not used to that like that, you know, but it just shows that when it does happen, that there's a safety procedure in place, and it's absolutely unbelievable and how quick they emptied the place and got them all out.
And they got it back going again then after?
They got it back going again afterwards.
That's impressive.
People came back in and they started up the racing again.
Yeah, geez. I can't really remember that. What year did you say it was?
That was the 21st of the 8th, 2007.
Yeah. Oh, so it's nearly 20 years ago. Yeah, it's a long time ago.
Yes, yeah.
I covered the bomb scare, one of my first news jobs for Radio Kerry, actually, because I happened to be in the area, was in Cathair Sibhín. There was a court being held there that day, and there was a suspicious device found right outside the door there, inside the wall, in the courthouse in Cathair Sibhín. For people that wouldn't know where the courthouse is, across the way from, you know, the market house, that shop there and petrol station, and then you had the library, and it's right across the way from that. And I covered for the whole day, and there was pandemonium going all day, and then the actual bomb squad came down from Cork, you know, the robot and everything. It came out. So it was a hoax device anyway. That's what happened in the end of it. But they actually, court went ahead, and it was held in the old Carnegie Library, which is actually being renovated at the moment. And apparently that's where court used to be held before the courthouse. So there was a bit of history there as well. And it went ahead. Yeah. So it was an unusual thing to cover, but there was fierce excitement. But thank God it wasn't anything too. It wasn't anything dangerous or whatever.
Sinister,
it was.
It's frightening, like when you get the call and everybody's moving out like that. And again, you're moving large crowds like that, and they have to be so careful like that. So what do they say? How do they announce it?
Yeah, you can't create panic.
Yes, they can't create panic like that. You know?
Yeah, very good, Dominic. A nice one to bring along. It got us remembering, and I know some people will remember that. Maybe people were there that day. As well, like Dominic was himself. Dominic, a pleasure as always. Our theme is My Home, so we get the thinking caps on. Whatever represents home to you, if you were out somewhere foreign and someone asked you, what does home mean to you, or where's home, and you could show them this image, that's what we want. Email it to jmcgill@radiokerry.ie. Dominic, I know you're busy. Keep up the good work, and we look forward to talking to you next month again.
Not a bother, Joe. You're a gentleman. It's great to have a chat with you. And you at home, it's lovely that you're listening to our radio show on the first Saturday of each month. Thank you so much.
Now we're going to take a break. We'll have the news, and join me again in the next hour. We'll be celebrating All-Ireland drama success. And we'll also be talking about the Hugh O'Flaherty Humanitarian Award.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by the new family fish box at Quinlan's Seafood Bars. Packed with golden fish goujons, fresh squid, delicious prawns and tasty homemade chips. Order yours to take away today.
Now, I hope you're enjoying the programme so far. A reminder from our monthly In Focus photography slot that we had before the news at 10, that our theme for next month is My Home. So it's like if you were sitting in a cafe somewhere around the world in Paris or somewhere, and someone said, where is home? And you show them this photo. Now, it could be a photo of a family member, a place, a special place to you, or it could be your home, your own homestead, whatever it is. Email them to jmcgill@radiokerry.ie before midday Wednesday, before the first Saturday of the month. And like I said in the first hour, the Ring of Kerry charity cycle is well underway, and well done to all the volunteers that are involved in it. And welcome if you're visiting the county and you're supporting someone along the route. And it'll be all worth it later on today when the cyclists finish it. And it is all for some great charities as well. And we had them on the programme not too long ago. And again, well done to Cathal Walsh and all the work he does with all the rest of the volunteers. Now, very special call out on the programme this morning for the Hugh O'Flaherty Humanitarian Award for closing nominations. And I'm delighted to say from the Hugh O'Flaherty Society, we have Jerry O'Grady from the Hugh O'Flaherty Memorial Society on the line. Jerry, you're very welcome this morning. How are you?
Morning, Joe. Thank you very much. I'm well, very well.
Tell us about the society, first of all, before we start talking about the award.
Yeah, it arose in 2008, even though the Monsignor was well past at that stage. It was from Killarney originally, Joe.
Yeah.
Our parents would have probably been a little bit aware of what he had done in Rome during World War II. But he was better known maybe because he was in a senior position in the Holy Office and so on. He spoke very little. When he came back to Kerry and retired and lived in Castlemaine, he spoke very little about actually what happened during the German occupation of Rome in 43 and 44. So it wasn't something that was in general discussion. But then in 2008, a Dublin-based author, Brian Fleming, published a book called The Vatican Pimpernel. And he had gone in forensically into the whole story. And I was in the Chamber of Commerce at the time, the Killarney Chamber of Tourism and Commerce. And two of our colleagues were coming back on a flight, I think, from London. And they were reading the Aer Lingus in-flight magazine, the Cara magazine. And it contained a review of Brian's book. And when my two colleagues, Deirdre Waldron and Greg Canty, when they arrived back in Killarney, they landed up into the office to me and lobbed the radio up on my desk and said, how come Killarney isn't celebrating this man like he should be?
Mm-hmm.
So the three of us, within a matter of seconds, had formed a committee. But we felt we needed a chair who would have influence with the powers that be.
Yeah.
And as luck would have it, the then mayor of Killarney, the late Michael Courtney, was one floor down from my office. So we just popped down the stairs and had a word with Michael, and Michael agreed to chair it, and that was how the committee was formed in 2008.
Wow.
And we took it on from there.
Yeah, and it's gone from strength to strength. Tell us about the weekend, the Memorial Weekend, and what's involved there, what goes on?
Well, that was one of the objectives that we set ourselves early on in 2008. We said we'd have to create a permanent memorial to his presence, to his humanitarian activities. And our target date was to have it done by the 50th anniversary of his death, which was going to happen in 2013. But we also felt that there needed to be something more, shall we say, tangible and you know, more dynamic happening rather than just a memorial. So what we struck upon is that we would have a humanitarian award. But we began in 2008 by presenting posthumously what we call the Killarney Humanitarian Award to Monsignor Hugh O'Flaherty. And that was presented to his family at a gathering in Killarney. And then we immediately said that from hence this moment on, it would be renamed the Hugh O'Flaherty Humanitarian Award and would be awarded annually.
Yeah.
So that was the origins of the actual award.
Yeah, that was very clever way of doing it, actually, and very fitting. And it has evolved over the years. And just give us a flavour of some of the recipients of the award.
Yeah, well, we've had quite a collection and quite diverse. And I suppose I won't pick out too many that would, because they were all deserving recipients. But there are a few who, I suppose, stand out in terms of profile. And the very first recipients, it was a double presentation in 2009. We invited, just like this week now, we put a call out for nominations. And we got quite a few. I think we had about 20 or so in the first year. And we had a lot of them from some of the NGOs, the non-governmental organizations that are out there doing charitable humanitarian work all over the world. And one of the nominations we got were for two young girls that worked for GOAL in Africa, Sharon Commons and Hilda Kawuki. And they had been abducted, literally, as the nominations were coming in, they had been abducted in Darfur.
Right.
And had disappeared off the scene. And to their credit, all of the other NGOs withdrew their nominations and re-nominated Sharon and Hilda.
Wow.
So both of them were selected as being the recipients. And the award was happening on the 30th of October that year. And we were going to present the award to their families who would travel down from Dublin for the award. But Sharon and Hilda were released before the ceremony. And Sharon, I would glad to say, was in a position to come and accept it personally herself.
Whoa, that must have been fairly emotional.
It was. It was an incredible evening, I must say. She was still very raw and very fresh from the whole experience. But she handled herself incredibly. For a young girl, she handled herself incredibly well. After that, we had a collection of others. We had Sally O'Neill from Trocara. She worked all over the world, but particularly in Latin America. And then, of course, we had that inspirational young Tralee man, Donal Walsh. Again, that was a posthumous award to Donal, and a very highly regarded award on that occasion. And he was followed the year after by another unusual one, an orthopedic surgeon from England, John Beavis, who had to retire from surgery because he had a cardiac issue. This is with the NHS in the UK. But instead of going off playing golf, he started up a charity called Ideals, and he spent pretty well the rest of his life out supervising surgery in Gaza and places like that.
Whoa.
And then he was an incredible individual as well.
Yeah.
And then we had two priests. It's not quite a religious award we're looking for, but these are the kind of people that came to the fore. Two very, very similar priests in terms of their attitude towards what needs to be done. And almost identical to you, O'Flaherty, in that sense. One was a Killarney man, Father Sean Myers, who was in Brazil. He had a parish apparently the size of Munster. But he was sent out by his order, the Columbans, back, I think, in the early 60s. And his brief, I think, was to set up the structures for the church. But having got there, he found very quickly that structures weren't going to help people. There was no point in trying to save their souls if you couldn't save their bodies to start with. So he became a very practical priest in terms of he became their dentist. He was their doctor. He was their farm management, you name it. Whatever it was, that's the role he filled.
Yeah.
And then the other priest the following year was a priest you might be aware of, a man called Father Shea Cullen, a Dublin man.
Yeah,
he works in the Philippines, and he is involved in protecting exploited children, because in Manila the amount of sexual exploitation of young children, especially young girls, was just off the charts. And he fought tooth and nail, fought the government. To make sure that they were saved, you know. So there are some of the individuals. We had some others as well. But there were some of the individuals who, I suppose, if you like, had an incredibly high profile.
Yeah.
For a plethora of reasons, you know.
Yeah. It strikes me, just from a personal point of view, Jerry, it's a wonderful thing to be involved in, isn't it? Recognising these people that have, you know, in some cases risked life and limb, very brave people, very entrepreneurial as well, and kind of a can-do attitude, and to, you know, recognise them, because often these people aren't recognised.
They aren't, and you're right. I mean, what stands out, I suppose, in most cases is that there's an evidence that they tend to kick the traces, if that's the right word to use. They don't go by the book in a lot of cases. As O'Flaherty himself said, he was once asked, you know, you've saved British troops, which would be considered to be the old enemy as far as Ireland was concerned. Yeah. You've saved communist fighters in Rome, because they were, of course, fighting the fascists as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you've saved Jews, and here you are, a Catholic, and you're doing all of this, and an Irish Catholic. And his answer was very simple, which is the motto on our memorial, and that is that God has no country.
Yeah,
he doesn't ask where you're from or what colour your skin is or what your political beliefs are. He didn't ask, O'Flaherty didn't ask. He simply saw a need and he filled that need, you know.
Yeah. So what you're a call out this morning. So what are you looking for in nominations?
Well, we've had a sort of a 6-year sabbatical, which was forced upon us by resources to start with. And then, of course, COVID came along in 2020, and that kind of put the kibosh as well on us. But we've been able to resurrect the entire process this year, mainly due to the generosity of the Kerry County Council Community Support Fund and the Killarney Chamber of Tourism and Commerce and one or two commercial sponsors. They've made it possible for us to do it this year. And what we're doing this year is we're increasing the bursary that's going with the award. For the first few years, Joe, people would come to accept the award. And the award was nothing, I say nothing more. The award was basically a medal and a scroll and a couple of knights in Killarney. That was the award originally for quite a number of years. And we felt that, look, this wasn't fair to be ringing somebody at pretty well enormous expense and you know, they leave with their hands hanging to them. So we did put in place for the last 2 years of the event, or the last 3 years of the event, this is 2017, 18 and 19, we put in place a bursary. But this year we've been able to double that up to €3,000. So, you know, for an organisation that's involved in humanitarian work, at least there's something additional in the award for them, you know. And as I said, that's been made possible by the support of Kerry County Council and the Chamber in Killarney and one or two other sponsors as well. And basically, we have a deadline for nominations this year of Friday the 10th, which is next Friday.
Yep.
The 10th of July.
Mm-hmm.
And we're looking very simple nominations, no more than 500 words. And we have an email address, which you might put on maybe on your own website there to send the nominations to.
And what's the email, Jerry?
The email, Joe, is O'Flaherty Society 2008 at gmail.com.
Perfect, and I'll be giving that out later on in the programme as well. It's O'Flaherty Society 2008 at gmail.com.
We have an independent selection panel. We don't get involved in it. We simply supply them with the nominations, and they'll come back in due course, probably sometime around the end of August, September, with a decision.
Okay.
And once we know that the recipient is happy, that the selected person is happy to become the recipient, then we'll make that public announcement.
So it can be a person from anywhere, really, and it's just that, like, I suppose the provisos is that they have contributed to humanity in some way.
Yeah, it can be a person, it can be a team, or it can be an NGO, an entire organisation. And yes, that they have provided exceptional humanitarian services at home or overseas, it doesn't really matter. And that have been a bit like O'Flaherty, that they do, in one way or another, provide refuge to the oppressed without regard for their race, their creed, their colour, or their political beliefs.
I'd say sometimes you kind of have to twist their arm maybe to accept it, because the nature of these people is that they do things not for the glory or for, you know, accolades. They just, you know, they have a drive in them to do it, much like Hugh O'Flaherty was himself. You know, he being from just outside Carrasavine, I know that he was the parish priest there. He's buried on the grounds, but he just went about daily life and no one knew who he was or what he did.
Exactly. They tended not to speak. And you're dead right. There were one or two, and I won't identify them. There were one or two where we literally had to say, ah, come on, you know, this. There's a greater purpose served by actually accepting it than by not serving it.
Yeah. Know?
So, yes, you're dead right. But there are a few people who for all the right reasons.
Yeah. And it helps their cause as well, because it gives the cause a profile as well, which is needed.
It does. It gives them a profile. And as I say, now with the new situation, there's also, albeit it's not a train smash, but there's a relatively reasonable amount of money as well going to help them in whatever work they do.
Yeah, brilliant. Excellent. Jerry, it's an absolute pleasure speaking to you this morning. Wish you the best of luck with it. And of course, there will be an announcement. No doubt you'll be in touch again. And hopefully I look forward to speaking to the worthy recipient or recipients when the time comes.
That'll be great, John. And once again, thanks very much.
We're going to take a break and we'll have more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across Kerry. Enjoy a simple, healthy and easy dinner solution with Quinlan's fresh, ready-made seafood meals available in store.
Now, I hope you're enjoying the programme so far. And as I've mentioned already, the Ring of Kerry Charity Cycle is taking place. So well done to all involved and also to the volunteers. And everyone involved in making it the success that it is. And I hope the charities do very well out of it. And well done to Cathal Walsh. And we did meet all the charities, like I mentioned, on this programme. So, and a big welcome if you're visiting the county, supporting those that are taking part. Now, hopefully later in the year, we'll be celebrating All-Ireland's success in the ladies and the men's. But we can already celebrate success in an All-Ireland in drama because Memory Lane Theatre Group has achieved outstanding success at the All-Ireland Confined Drama Finals in Carrickmore in County Tyrone with their production of Heaven by Eugene O'Brien. Now, at the national finals, Memory Lane received three prestigious nominations. They had Best Presentation Group and Best Stage Management, Siobhan Keane Lowe, and Best Stage Lighting for Joe O'Sullivan. And Joe O'Sullivan went on to win the top national award for Best Stage Lighting, receiving the highly regarded Playlight Perpetual Cup. And he joins me on the line now. And Joe, I suppose, firstly, congratulations. An absolutely an outstanding achievement. We have a great history of drama in this county. So tell us, firstly, about the group itself.
Well, how this started out, you know, a lot of my background is I was involved in various shows down through the years. And I started working with Padre Denny, who's the director of Memory Lane. And he wrote me in through other projects that he was doing. I was doing lighting, sound and that kind of stuff for them. And then all of a sudden, he was forming a theatre group called Memory Lane. And before I knew it, I was inside in the ticket, up to my eyes, doing this, that and everything. And I have a passion about the whole thing, but lighting always fascinated me. So we started doing a few shows, and limited resources was a major problem starting out. But every year we invested a couple of little bits and pieces in buying our own bits of equipment. And then Padraig thinks really outside the box. He's an unusual director from a point of view of that he could tell you I'm doing a inside in a circus tent, I'm doing a drama. Or he could be out inside in a field. And some of the ideas that he had in his head didn't come off because they were off, really off the wall. But the great thing about it, we done a thing called Roadside, which was based around the old fit-ups, you know, the touring theatre groups. Yeah. And it was open air. And it was absolutely brilliant. Got massive reviews. And it was during COVID, so you had the social distancing and all. And that was kind of the start. Now, technically, you didn't need a pile of light because you had loads of sunlight out in the open and in the evening. But as the evening went on, we were losing it, and we used, I think, a couple of builder's lamps on the second night. We took that down to Galleris as well, and we performed it down there.
Okay.
So the following year then, he started throwing out ideas, and he said, do you know what I think we'll do? We'll enter the drama circuit. So in the meantime, he was also involved with Knocknagoshal, and I got roped in there, and that was one of the first ones. Now, prior to that, I had done the circuit with Zyber, the Tralee-based. So learning your craft along the way. But Padraig was the one always that saw outside the box, that little bit extra. Not saying I'm against anyone else, but you need a pile of time to... And I had to develop my own confidence as well, I suppose, where you can take control of your skills. So we started pushing the boat a little bit, and the next one he decided before I knew it, he was doing The Trojan Women, which is a Greek tragedy. Mm. Massive production from, like, even the set design, you know, the pillars of Troy going in and the mountain and the whole thing. So I ended up burning the city, and I burned the whole stage. And you used to get a wow factor every night.
Yeah.
The funny thing about that, there was another play that we'd done as well then, which was not Memory Lane, but Padraig directed it with Mike O'Mandy from Ardfert. You know Mike, the actor from Ardfert?
Yeah.
He done Luke Mark's Gospel. He learned it off word for word. And that was a fabulous show to light because there was every second or third line you had a new cue. So you really had to concentrate. And what I just love is getting the audience wow factor. You hear them, ooh, you know, the crucifixion scenes and all that kind of stuff. Little tricks.
Yeah.
I got really stuck into that. Next, what was the next one we done after that? We done, oh yeah, Count Carey's Apostles.
That was written by
Noel Lane from Brosna.
Brosna, yeah. Yeah, we covered that.
Yeah,
all these plays you mentioned, but I remember them having them on the programme and talking about them, yeah.
Yeah, so we toured with that and we ended up in the Marquee in the J Grounds in Brosna. And I think we done normally nights. But I had to bring in the technology to that. Mm. So that's where the costs, and I think I have a little bee that I want to put out there as well. Like, if the government are listening, to get young people involved in the technique, which I'm very passionate about, that they should make funding available to have the facilities and the technology available to encourage young people to learn that side of it. Because not everyone has the confidence to be an actor.
Yeah.
You know,
and not everyone knows that that's an opportunity or it's an option to them.
Yes, that's right. And I mean, I know loads of friends professionally in this business that are crying out for technicians at the moment that they can't get them. But they can't get them with experience. Mm. You can get plenty of them coming out of school and colleges, but they have no experience. They can't coil a cable for you. Mm-hmm. So I think there's huge openings for that. Now, going back to the next one, then the one that won. Very minute I read the script, that was heaven. Mm-hmm. I said to Patrick, we're on a winner here. I knew there was something about it. And he had his cast, which were brilliant, the two actors, Sarek and Johnny. And now I nearly walked away from it halfway through because I decided and I convinced Patrick to buy a video wall to bring it into the production. Was I sorry afterwards? I got sick first for a while, and the amount of learning to get that thing working, it failed two nights. And eventually, so it broke my heart along the way to get it going. But eventually when we got there, on the night of the final, I knew I was very confident. And even the night before when we were above in Tyrone, I was working on the computer, fine-tuning. And I felt, do you know the way, like you were like a footballer training? You get so confident that you know you're on a winner, but you can't open your mouth and just go out and do it. And every one of the shows, the judge commented, do you know, they comment after each show, something about the lighting, except ours. So it worked so well. That was basically what I'm saying. So I was absolutely, but by any stretch of the matter, I said, some of the guys that I was up with, I know who they are because I'd be watching their work. There's no way I'm going to win this. Like, I'm not even in their league. Like. And when I got nominated first, I said, well, wow, this is a thrill because the production of the night and presentation night was class. It was the big video wall in the background and a lot of people with chains of office up on the stage, which most technical people, I wasn't even dressed properly for the occasion, you know. So, and we were, our table was the way down at the end. Next thing, when he called out my name, and I'm on crutches, I had to walk all the way up. I can remember coming down, people congratulating me, you know, but it's a blur going up.
Yeah.
Because the cheering and roaring and all that kind of stuff. Like,
yeah.
So, it's something you just dream about all your life to get something like this.
Yeah, and I know you're in it for the work, but then I suppose after all those years and all different trials and tribulations and figuring out something, then to get that, I suppose, acclaim for the work is kind of nice, yes. Isn't it? It's rewarding.
And the funny thing about it, Martin McGuire, who's the adjudicator, specialises in lighting.
Okay.
Which made it better for me, you know. Apparently he's known for... But I did learn one thing along the way when the judges were talking. One judge said to us, if two judges make the same comments of what changes you should be making, you should be doing it. I took that on board. And it was the little detailed things, you know, that they were saying. And I remember one of them saying, you'll figure it out. Mm. And he has a lighting company, that judge. So it just goes to show like that. Work hard and keep at it.
Yeah. Tell us about Heaven. What's it about?
Heaven is about, it's an interesting play. It's about a married couple, but he was living a lie that he was gay, and he lived a whole marriage through, and she obviously knew, but the time it was set, like back in 60s, 70s, you know. It's a modern play, like.
Yeah.
And it's, there's parts of it very sad, like.
Yeah.
And of course, we had Mike Denny, Patrick's brother, he built the set. And there was some lovely, fabulous, of course, I'm all technical, like. There was a part where it was a shop front, but underneath the window of the shop, that was the video wall. So we were able to do amazing things to that, like turn it into a bedroom and have the, you know, the bedside lamps, and but the bed came out from underneath it.
Hmm. Okay. So when you say video wall, is this like a large screen that you can make a set?
It's a pixelated, yeah. You build it like Lego bricks.
Okay.
Yeah, but you have the new thing called video mapping and all that kind of stuff then. Yeah, there's the processing and all that is very very complex.
I'm just thinking, like, when you're probably watching someone else's work in or a play, or when you're doing your own, you're looking at something completely different to what
exactly.
Norman Joe Soap is looking at.
Yeah, you're looking at, even when I'm watching the television program, I'm watching angles or a film.
Yeah,
I'm watching all that and what way the lighting is coming in and, you know, how they're doing these, how they're getting the depth of field, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and how nice was it when, you know, you got three prestigious nominations, Best Group, Best Stage Management, and Best Stage Lighting. And what was it like, you know, to receive the nomination with Siobhan Keane Law?
Yeah, it's fabulous. Like, it's, but the funny thing about myself and Siobhan are from Tralee.
Okay.
Originally, so that's really funny as well, because you can imagine the, you know, these groups, there's a bit of banter between everyone. And,
yeah,
and I played in a band, but years ago with Siobhan as well.
Okay.
Long time ago, that's when we were teenagers.
Yeah. Stay with me, Jor, because I want to find out more about your work. And I know Jor has, he showed me the cup, and it's an impressive cup as well. The highly regarded Play Light Perpetual Cup. It's a beautiful cup as well. So that's nice. A nice thing to have in the mantelpiece coming into the Christmas as well. It'll be up there.
Yes, my kids are. But they also give me a piece of Belique.
Okay.
One soft piece of. It's about the same height as the cup.
Okay.
Which the data and the date and the back. One soft piece.
Very good.
That was nice.
Yeah. Right. We'll go to a break and we'll have more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across Kerry. Take the fear out of fish and chat to our fishmongers about how to add delicious, easy to cook seafood into your menu. Oven and air fryer ready meals available.
We're celebrating the success of Memory Lane Theatre Group. They received three prestigious nominations in the All-Ireland Confined Drama Finals in Carrickmore in County Tyrone, and they actually won. And I'm delighted to say the winner is with me, Jor O'Sullivan. He won for stage lighting, receiving the highly regarded Play Light Perpetual Cup. Jor, and I'm kind of interested, we were talking about the technical side of what was involved in the production Heaven and all the work that went in behind the scenes, but what got you into this first day? Because I'm wondering, when you were growing up, was this a thing even?
Yes. Well, my dad, he was part of the rural electrification. I'm the oldest in the family. And he also had a hobby where he used to fix radios and clocks, tape recorders. And so we had a workshop at home and I would spend most of my time inside that workshop.
Whoa.
Right? And I learned so much from him, and I inherited a lot of his books and tools and all that kind of stuff. Even though he worked as a builder's labourer, because there was no opportunities that time, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But the man was gifted. He was known as Mechanical Dan, and I mean, he just could fix anything, absolutely anything, from televisions to cars. I saw him making parts for cars, like, and he taught me how engines worked. So I had a massive interest in anything technical. When I was going to school, if I hadn't an interest, I'm not doing it. I would just be zoned out completely. So the funny thing about it is, and of course my daughter's kind of the same way as well then,
yeah.
Which is, you know, the girl from, you know, that's the singer.
Yeah.
That wrote the Kingdom Come song.
Yeah.
So she's the same. Oh, and she's the same, carry on you. She won't do anything else, only like myself. So what happened was, at about 12 years of age, I had a first cousin in England, Denny, and he was a DJ in the Aston Villa football club. And there was a company in England called Roger Squire who supplied disco equipment, and they had brochures, and he would send them over to me. So I got this notion. So I started, normally, going around to radio shops in town and getting speakers out of old televisions and making boxes, and then started doing DJing. And a massive interest. I had a huge record collection as well. That was my hobby. And buying bits of microphones and things, and doing a disco when I was about 12, 14, I'd say, in my mother's front garden, where I'd have all the neighbours 30 or 40 every Sunday evening. Right? When there wasn't even a nightclub, there was nothing. I then had one of the first mobile DJs outfits in Kerry. So I was always, I think I was ahead of the curve all the time.
Had you an alias? Had you a name?
Well, there was a loads of them. I can't even remember the first one. I think it was a number I had the first time. And I remember then I got this purple silk shirt and a black hat with a feather in it. That was the outfit when I was 16. I became a DJ in Horns at 16 or 17.
Whoa.
In Tralee. And I ended up becoming the... And then I saw opportunities where there was long before they were doing any sound or lighting or anything in these colleges. I got the opportunity of buying equipment and I used to do all the college gigs, the sound for dinner, lunchtime. And so I wasn't really going to college. I was in there making money. I was in the students' union.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, I was doing... I'd done a proper apprenticeship then, engineering apprenticeship, in Kingdom Tubes, maintenance factory, and I had other factory jobs. But I gave that up and went back and done a business course. When I had kids, I had to come home and tell my ex one day that I'm giving all this up and I'm going to start doing something new. And it worked out fine, you know. And of course, I was doing 9 shows a week at one stage. And I came to a stage when, you know, I worked with Radio Kerry for the transition when that I dropped the first outside broadcast unit and set all that up. And under Paul Sheen, I'd done all the, I was one of the first people to use any of the new digital broadcasting.
Okay.
So I was there from the analog to digital changeover. I can remember cleaning the heads and the tapes. Fiona Stack sending me down cleaning the heads and the tape. And then after a while, this new digital stuff came in and all those machines were starting to be scrapped.
Yeah.
And, you know, and years later then, I done an archiving project for Muckross House, where I spent a couple of years putting digitizing all their music collection because I had the old skills that were no one has now.
Yeah.
And the DJing kept going. And then all of a sudden, in the late 80s, there was a couple of recessions, which meant a lot of people were out of work. But when you have music, you'll always make a few bob.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't I come along and karaoke? I read about this thing in 1986. And it was only in Japan, but I said, this is perfect for Ireland. So I tried everywhere to get it. And I could have gone to Japan that time because all the words were in English, but all the advertising was in Japanese. So I thought the songs were in Japanese. If I had brought them over, because they were singing all the songs phonetically in English, the words on the machines. So I got a machine and I went myself and Donnie Horton, because it was very expensive, in 1989. And we started a competition with the college. And before I knew it, I was doing project gigs for Guinness, all the festivals. I became a superstar for a while. I remember during the Rose of Tralee, about 15,000 people and security helping me off the stage. I sang in autographs. I mean, that was bonkers.
And doing karaoke.
I had it. Yeah. But I always done it as a production.
Okay.
And this is what I learned.
Yeah.
Because it was a show.
Mm.
Do you understand?
Yeah.
I never allowed anyone go up and mess with a microphone. You have to try it. That was my rule.
So you were ahead of your time because it's like a lot of the talent singing that came after that.
Yes, I discovered so many people around. That's the funny thing about it. But the amount of people that went down afterwards and done very well out of it.
Yeah.
But in Japan, I remember reading, there was 2 Japanese went to Canada and one of their friends was up singing and one of them got put away for murder because the crowd started laughing at him singing. His friend took out a gun and shot him.
Oh, my God.
So, and I mean, like that, they take it very serious. But that didn't happen here. And I think that was due to the kind of drink culture that was in Ibiza and all these places, you know, where, because I detest anyone going up, go home and do that in front of a mirror, like, or at a house party, make a fool of yourself, but not in a public place.
And tell us, how does that get you along the line then into the whole?
So all along then, I always had, because you see, I set up a place where I hired out sound equipment, lighting, all that kind of stuff. That was the biggest disaster ever because everyone had take the gear and I'd pay you next week. and you'd have to go away and you'd be trying to collect.
And cash flow's king.
Equipment not being coming back the day it's supposed to come back, you know what I mean? It's a nightmare. Now, the model was, and it was during the recession, people didn't have it, you know, so, and I got bad advice on the type of equipment to buy. But, so that cost me. But the karaoke was the lifesaver. And then in the meantime, I was all the time doing, I'd done a stint in Sheemsa, doing sound and things. I was lots of bands. I mentored lots of bands. So there was always sound and light, and it was mostly technical. I was interested in myself. And I was trying to teach them that that's, if you don't have that side of it right, you're wasting your time. And so maybe I was a bit shy, maybe, that I didn't want to push myself out there in front, even though I had to. Maybe that's where I missed out, or I wasn't able to communicate it properly. You know, looking back on it, I definitely missed out massive opportunities. Like the amount of people that have gone through my hands that are really sound and lighting jobs all over the place. There's good few in RTE, there's National Concert Hall. They've all spent time with me. But that's lovely to look, and most of them contact me still.
Yeah.
You know, they said that they, yeah.
Do you think you found your passion in the stage? Will you go into another production?
I'm already working on one. I'm working on two. So, the memory then are going doing Nano, a tribute to Sigurd and Clifford. And we're taking it down to Castlebean, believe it or not, your country. Mm-hmm. So you'll have to come to that.
Definitely.
I was told to invite you.
So, Joe, we look forward to seeing all you get up to. But once again, congratulations. It's a huge achievement, a national competition like that with such prestige, and to win the cup and to bring the cup to Kerry.
Before you go, and you my family, right? My they used to be given out to me for, what are you at? And my brother, you know? And 'twas worried about, like, because I my health suffered for this, like the hours I put in, because I'm a bit of a perfectionist. And but one of my brothers, there was tears in his eyes when I won it on the night, you know. It meant that much, because for years, like, they were kind of saying, Jesus, like, you'll kill yourself. But it's worth it all.
Yeah.
You know, like, looking back in it that way.
Yeah, you can't add much more to that. Jor, congratulations. No. Well done. And we look forward to
thanks very much.
We look forward to see your next production.
Yeah, with the next one, move on. We'll keep at it. I want to die on stage.
On that note, we're going to take a break. We'll have more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars, located across Kerry. Supplement your diet with a healthy and fresh dinner option. Fresh seafood from Quinlan's.
Now, we had a caller in for Tom Lynch, our birdwatch expert, who comes on the Saturday Supplement from time to time, originally from Dingle, of course. And the caller said, I have a little gap in my roof, and these are small blackbirds, potentially sparrows, keep flying in there, making their nests and having their babies. Are they doing damage to my roof? And what time of year will these birds fly away so I can close the gap and stop them coming back? I don't want to do it when their chicks are still young. And I sent this to Tom, and he got back to me and he said, if they are sparrows, they should be well finished nesting in that space around now, or at least in a few more weeks. Your listener can block up the space they are using any time after that. Some people use expanding foam to block up the entrance, but any tradesman will advise or complete the job. So I hope that helped. Now, it is the 4th of July, and I neglected to say this at the start of the programme. Happy 4th of July to all our American friends. And I did a bit of digging and researching, because I thought, what's the Irish connection now to the 4th of July? And there's a great article in that wonderful publication, IrishCentral.com. Irish facts about Independence Day you may not know. And this is a very good one. So, you know, the Star Spangled Banner, which of course is the national anthem of America, sung so wonderfully at several Super Bowls, including the Whitney Houston one, was one that really stood out. But according to expert Jeff Cobb, writing in the Irish American magazine, the blind Irish composer Turlough O'Carolan wrote the song regarded as the ancestor of the American national anthem. His 1723 tune, Bumper Squire Jones, honours one of the composer's patrons.
Bumper Squire Jones is in fact metrically identical to Francis Scott Key's famous song. Many believe the tune Bumper Squire Jones came to London, where decades later John Stafford Smith added his own words to it, transforming it into a drinking song called Anacreon in Heaven. This song, a big hit during the late 18th and early 19th centuries, travelled across the Atlantic, where it was modified and used by Key as the melody for the US national anthem. Now, another one, of course, there was Irish signatories on the Declaration of Independence, and Charles Carroll was one of those. He was born on September 19, 1737 in Annapolis, Maryland, the only child of Charles Carroll and Elizabeth Brooke. He was born illegitimate, as his parents were not married at the time of his birth. He was Catholic and his family came from County Offaly. Because he was Catholic, he was barred from participating in politics under the Maryland No Property Act. Not surprisingly, he led the fight in his state for independence from the British. He was the last signatory of the Declaration of Independence to die aged 95. And now there was another Irish involvement. There was an Irishman who printed the Declaration of Independence. He was from Tyrone and he was born in 1747 and immigrated to Philadelphia at age 10. He fought for Washington's army and later won a lucrative contract from the Continental Congress to publish all their documents. So on July 2nd, 1776, John Hancock, and you know that when you're asked to give your John Hancock your signature, that's where that comes from, ordered Dunlap to print broadside copies of the Declaration. And Dunlap printed perhaps 200 broadsides known as the Dunlap Broadsides, which were the first published versions of the Declaration. And Dunlap retired young and wealthy at the age of 47, but apparently developed a major alcohol problem in retirement, according to his friend Dr. Benjamin Rush. And the first newspaper to publish the Declaration of Independence was the Belfast Newsletter on August 23rd, 1776. And according to the newspaper itself, which is still publishing, details of the Declaration were carried on a ship which was storm-bound off the coast of Donegal and was berthed for shelter in the port of Derry in August 1776. They were taken up to the Belfast offices of the newsletter, then published by Henry and Robert Joy, and when published in the August 23rd to 27th, 1776 edition of the paper, they caused much stir. It was a European scoop for the newsletter founded in 1737, for King George III in London had not even been acquainted of the news. So that's some facts, Irish facts, around the 4th of July. I hope you enjoyed them. That's all we have time for on the programme this morning. My thanks to Abigail Bernard, who was on sound. I'll be back again next Saturday with the Saturday Supplement. Pat Kelly's on the way, so keep it here on Radio Kerry. Until then, look after yourself and take care.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars, located across Kerry. Because at least one day of the weekend should involve someone else doing all the cooking. Order your delicious takeaway from Quinlan's today.